If you guys are really us, what number are we thinking of? 69, dudes!
Welcome back to the Strip LA Podcast. Returning to the podcast airwaves for the first time in a little over a month, but we didn't really have any news to talk about. But now we do, thanks to a very active Friday from Brian Cashman and Yankees management. I'm Andrew Mearns here with Matt Provenzano and Matt Ferencik. How are you guys doing?
Pretty good.
What do you think of the Yankees' pre-weekend activities?
Pretty okay exciting. With them.
Yeah, definitely exciting. Mm-hmm.
In case whoever is listening to this missed, for whatever reason, the Yankees traded for Arizona's shortstop Didi Gregorius. They sent away Shane Green to Detroit. That was a three-team trade. And on the same day, they signed Andrew Miller to a four-year, $36 million contract to be something in their bullpen. They haven't really said what yet, but that's okay.
Yeah. I would much prefer, for future reference, Yankees, if you're listening, not to do transactions, multiple ones on the same day. One day at a time.
Yeah, it was a bit overwhelming for it to all happen at once. It's like, I was like going out to move my car, and then I like come back, it's like, oh, they made another move. Oh, good, I guess.
Well, yeah, and then just after wrapping up that move, they make another move. Mm-hmm. But at least it's better than nothing.
No, yeah, and it took them long enough to strike, really. Other than that, the only big news the offseason had been, what, re-signing Chris Young?
Chris Young.
and trading Francisco Cervelli.
Yeah, Cervelli, too.
Yes. Another thing that happened, well, we were not talking, I guess, was Francisco Cervelli traded to the Pirates because the Pirates just can't get enough of Yankees catchers. So now the Yankees have Justin Wilson, another left-hander in their bullpen.
I don't know if you guys saw the tweets from backup catcher Tony Sanchez in regards to acquiring Francisco Cervelli. I don't know if you're familiar with that. Tony Sanchez, every single year, Tony Sanchez tweets in response to them acquiring a Yankees catcher.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
After the Pirates signed Russell Martin, Sanchez says, what? You guys thought it was going to be handed to me on a silver platter? Got to earn it? Haven't so far. When they got Chris Stewart, he said, extra motivation never hurt nobody. And then after trading for Cervelli, he says, good. Competition brings the best out of me.
I like the idea that next year the Pirates will trade for Romine, and he's going to be like, okay, what the hell?
It's going to be like, oh, I got this.
No, he just tweets his retirement from baseball. Oh, that's pretty funny. He just keeps on fighting the good fight, but to no avail. Cervelli was a lot of fun, but I could understand the Yankees wanted to move him. And I know some Pirates fans are big fans of Justin Wilson. So, yeah. If they traded from a strength, they have John Ryan Murphy or Romine, really, who could back up McCann. So might as well get one of those, five catchers on the 40-man roster off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that, and the thing that, like, a lot of people are some Yankee fans are kind of upset they traded Cervelli, but I feel like Cervelli almost has, like, the Unieski Betancourt illusion, where, like, Uni would make, like, diving plays and people would think his defense is good, when in fact it was terrible. And it's kind of like that with Cervelli. It's like he just, like, shows grit and hustles, and then people think he's, like, a better player. But not to say he was a bad player, but...
Oh, yeah, he was, like, way better than Uni was. He was a very good... He was a good pitch framer, I think, and he also hit pretty decently for a catcher.
Yeah, but in essence, his, like, demeanor made him seem better than he actually was.
Fist pumps.
And plus, anytime he did get, like, an extended run, he would get hurt right after.
Yeah, exactly.
Be gone forever.
Yep.
I still remember how excited I was in 2013. I was like, well, they didn't bring Martin back, but hey, Cervelli looks like he's finally going to take advantage of the shot. He started off really hot, and then he just broke his hand. And it's like, well, we're not doing this anymore.
Well, and then he got suspended, too, so.
Yeah.
That didn't help.
As a great philosopher once said, fool me once, strike one. Fool me twice, strike three. Oh, man.
Chris Stewart.
Yeah.
He's that plus shit the third grade.
It was Chris Stewart. I guess now, Chris, I like that the Pirates have gone through the strategy of, hey, you know what worked? The 2013 Yankees plan at catcher. Let's do that.
Yep.
Well, I mean, that kind of segues into some of the moves that have been made by the Yankees division rivals. The Blue Jays kind of shocked everyone by signing Russell Martin to like a pretty similar contract to what Brian McCann signed for last year, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah,
it was about $82 million, I think, over 5 years. Which is pretty crazy. I mean, granted, I think Russell Martin is great. I think he's a great catcher. But he's only 2 years off from being what he was a couple years ago, which is just like, okay, like he was decent. He wasn't, obviously wasn't bad. He wasn't like a superstar like he was the past 2 years. So he's a year older, yeah.
He's a year older than McCann, so.
Yeah, so I think he'll be somewhere in the middle between the two of those because he's still pretty good. But I think that's a lot of money to pay for. I guess they really had no choice. They had no catcher.
Hey, they had Deonte Navarro.
Yeah.
What was very strange is I think that day that they signed Martin, the Cubs had been rumored to like have had a deal with Martin for like $65 million or something like that, and then it's like, oh no, the Blue Jays just had this giant offer. Well,
yeah. Oh, that was one, and then the other one was the Blue Jays trading for Josh Donaldson.
You know, a minor move. To just make their lineup terrifying, even more so.
Yeah. Josh Johnson will now be, I believe he's still pre-arb.
Yeah.
Which is unbelievable. They're paying the league minimum for him.
Yeah, and you're throwing that in a lineup that already has Jose Bautista, Edwin Encarnacion. Martin.
Yeah.
Martin's in that lineup now, too, and he's a pretty good hitter for a catcher.
Yeah. So. Good thing their pitching stinks.
Yeah, I guess they have, they still have Dickey, right? Dickey and Burley.
They do. Dickey's also like 43 now.
Yeah. Yeah, Burley's fairly reliable. Dickey's kind of unpredictable. Other than that, yeah, they need to address the starting pitching concerns before anyone hands them the division title. And I think the same can be said for the Red Sox, who, of course, in one day signed two third basemen, which is a little bit of a bold.
Incredibly bold. I wouldn't have predicted that.
Yeah,
having Hanley play left field will be a lot of fun to watch.
Yeah, I guess they feel like, you know, if they could get it, they got away with playing Manny Ramirez in left field. And he was tripping over himself all the time, and you know he hit well enough to make it worth it. But I guess we'll see. They definitely improved the lineup, and really, of course, it makes their outfield situation very confusing. I don't really understand what's going on there, but I guess that's their concern.
Yeah, it's better than having too few outfielders, I feel like. But
like the Blue Jays, they have even more concerning rotation issues right now. I think their ace, if you want to call it that, is Joe Kelly. Or
and then Clay Buchholz.
Robbie De La Rosa, Brandon Workman. Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like the Red Sox rotation is the one, like, if you're playing a franchise as them in a video game and, like, you go into rebuild mode, like you get rid of all their players, like that's what it looks like, their rotation.
Yeah, so, yeah. It's a bad seed.
Yeah, my number three starter, Robbie De La Rosa. But I'm not concerned about that.
No, yes.
That's their problem.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Yankees have their own problems, as we know.
Yeah, and of course, part of the rotation is one of the problems now. Well, I mean, it was still like a problem before, but it definitely has a bigger hole now that Green, who we enjoyed, but it's probably worth giving up in the Gregorius trade. He's in Detroit now, and so now, right now, the Yankees starting rotation, if opening day was tomorrow, which would be weird, but it would have Tanaka, Pineda, CeCe Sabathia, David Phelps, and I don't know.
And then I guess Adam Warren would be the next one.
I guess so, or yeah.
I know Brian Cashman said he wasn't adverse to moving Adam Warren back to the rotation. I'm sure that would last about a week,
but they need to make some moves to address that starting rotation concern, whether that's bringing back Brandon McCarthy, which we supported, or it maybe in it, I should say, or and going after Max Scherzer slash John Lester. Because they could bring back, you know, two of those three guys, and that would really address a lot of concerns. It'd be a lot of money, but...
I think an underrated decision-making... an underrated decision that the Yankees would make is signing James Shields. Not so much because he would be cheaper, but because he would be for fewer years. Maybe per year he would cost the same. But for some reason, I think the Yankees are going to try to not sign a seven-year deal this year, or at least try to. They don't even want to go to 4 years with Headley, supposedly. I think they're really trying. I think the Steinbrenners, I think Cashman is really trying to reset after like 3 years from now when all the contracts sort of expire at once. And I think signing another 7 year deal just sets back that timeline a little bit further. But if you sign a guy like Shields in 4 years, his contract will probably expire. That leaves 2018, 2019 like pretty much open.
Unless some club wants to give Shields a 5 year deal.
We're talking about James Shields.
Well, yeah, James Shields. I think it wouldn't surprise me if someone gave him like a 5 year offer, and I wouldn't really want to be that close to that.
No, I wouldn't want to touch that with the amount of mileage he has on his arm and his age. It's just not good. But I think if the Yankees could squeak out that, they would definitely go for that. Because I mean, you'd be paying him through his age, what, 37 season anyway. Mm-hmm. And you'd be getting that with Lester. And Scherzer as well,
but I think the argument against that though would be that you wouldn't be getting as good seasons in the early parts.
No.
And that's kind of what the Yankees are. They're win now mode. They're always in win now mode, but especially you know you have Britt Gardner in his prime, Jacoby Ellsbury in his prime, and they're not going to stay there. So you know,
it's true. I don't think they have a set plan. I think they have an idea, and it kind of just depends on what the market allows them to do.
Like, I think they're willing to sacrifice that draft pick for a good enough player, which makes sense.
I think they want to save the draft pick, but I don't think they're, like, so intent that they'll do anything to save it.
Mm-hmm. And that's probably part of the strategy. If they do decide to let David Robertson walk, then they would get a compensation pick. So even though it wouldn't be as high as their top pick, which I think at this point would be around 16th or 17th.
I think it's 17th.
It wouldn't be as high, but it'd still be, you know, better than when they had to settle for, you know, Dante Bichette Jr. and, like, for the top pick and, like, the 55th overall or something. Or Jacob Lindgren this year, who, like, you know, they're intriguing prospects, but not the type of, like, changing ones, you know.
Yeah.
But I guess that kind of segues into discussion the bullpen now with Robertson's return very much uncertain with the signing of Andrew Miller, but what were your thoughts on the Andrew Miller signing?
I mean, overall, I don't have that big a problem with it. Really, really good.
He was about as good as he could get for a guy in the bullpen last year. So
my only concern is that like he was good out of nowhere, but it doesn't have the same type of track record that David Robertson has. He had this amazing year this year. And then, like, the last few years he was good, but he had, like, a walk rate around 5, which is a pretty big red flag. So, although they were similar over the past 3 years, they're still kind of skewed by the fact that he had one amazing year and two kind of eh years. So I don't know, he may be more volatile. But I guess $36 million in this type of market for an elite reliever isn't that bad.
Yeah, I was surprised to... I mean, the price wasn't cheap, but it was certainly lower than, like, the $40 million price tag I was seeing a lot thrown around him. But
yeah, if it was 40, I would have been pretty uncomfortable. I mean, it's only $4 million, but it still makes me a little uncomfortable. And there were no options, nothing. There was nothing. And he also doesn't have a no trade clause either. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that doesn't mean they're just going to deal him, but there's no, you know, strings attached here. And I think the Yankees are willing to absorb, like, the last year, if he gets bad. I don't think they care.
And what's interesting is that he's only 29, too. So it's not like this is, like, a Matt Thornton signing where Matt Thornton is already, like, 38 or something. Obviously, this is for a lot more money than Thornton, but Miller's still in his prime, really. And he only just entered the bullpen a couple years ago, so.
Yeah, and it's such a small sample that I'm sure that the Yankees had to rely heavily upon scouting reports. And more so on just sheer metrics, because most of his career data isn't reliable. Anything before 2012 is not even reliable. because it's all starting. So you got to kind of scrap that, and you got to start from 2012, and then you got to see how his mechanics change, because they did. And then you have to explain for the increase in strikeout rate, the decrease in walk rate, and then the fact that his home run rate is, like, ridiculously unsustainable.
Yeah. Well.
So they, I'm cautiously optimistic about this one, but I would imagine that they're relying heavily on their scouting and analytics here. So could be worse. And they also, it's cheap, because the thing is, like, if this works out, they'll essentially have the same quality bullpen for a cheaper price, and they get a compensation pick. That's kind of the way I'm looking at it. Maybe in 4 years it won't be the same bullpen, but in theory, we're talking about maybe it'll be a half win, better or worse, either way.
I agree. The Miller signing, I mean, he's a very talented person who, obviously, the Orioles thought enough of him that they were willing to give up a pretty decent pitching prospect for him for just half a season at the deadline, and while they're making a run to the division title. So, I mean, that's also encouraging. So there's a lot to like about Andrew Miller, and I think I'm okay with it. It's just going to be weird if it means that definitely puts the nail in the Robertson coffin, even though I think they could still hypothetically sign both of them. I don't think they will.
I don't think they should either. I think spending almost $20 million a year on two relievers is a terrible idea.
It'd be a big commitment, and I don't know. I feel like I might be able to emotionally justify it to myself just because I like Robertson so much. But
yeah,
it would be. I can understand the hesitation of, like, wanting to give Robertson another big deal, especially if Houston's willing to give him a pretty big contract too.
I mean, there's a good possibility that he would accept a lesser deal from the Yankees.
Yeah, I just wonder. Miller
did the exact same thing.
Yeah, Miller had the 4-year, $40 million offer in hand from the Astros, and he's like, no, he probably went to SB Nation and looked at the Astros gifts, and he's like, maybe not.
Well, I mean, that's very, very curious, because the thing is, like, you're going to be in fewer high leverage situations if you're playing for the Astros.
Yeah.
So it's almost like you're, like, wasting your talent at your prime of your career.
Yeah, and I think he's been on teams that have gone nowhere before, because he was on the Marlins for like a good 3 years and they weren't really doing much.
Sure, didn't like it.
Yeah, he spent a full season on the 2012 Red Sox. So he's
I mean, the thing is, like, and I'm sure he's also thinking about, I'm sure he's very happy, but I'm sure there's also from his agent thinking about what you're going to do after this contract. Like, if you're going to be spending 4 years with a team, you eventually want, ideally, to sign another deal. Maybe not as big, but maybe like a 3-year contract in an even more inflated market. And if you're playing for the Astros for 4 years, you're like, your number, you're just not going to rack up the number of quote unquote counting stats that teams find sexy. You're not going to have as many saves. You're not going to have as many games. You may have like the Matt Albers, like, games finished without a save record.
Yeah. Well. And another thing might just be, even if he's doing this in New York, and even if he hits struggles at some point, at the end of his contract, he's only going to be about 33. And so even if he has struggles at some points, I'm sure there will still be teams that might be just saying, well, let's get him out of Yankee Stadium and see how he does a little bit better. And he might still get a nice deal, kind of like Phil Hughes did.
Yep.
Yeah, absolutely. Or even if the Yankees wanted to trade him and eat some of the money if they really felt like he wasn't doing well, a team would totally take a waiver on him, even if he was struggling.
Yeah.
So, yeah, he's not like the contract is small enough that the Yankees can exercise their financial clout to eat most of the contract if they wanted to get rid of him and still get something in return.
Yeah. What do you think about the possibility of Robertson going, Matt F?
I mean, it really makes me sad. Mm-hmm. Like, I wouldn't care if they signed him, because it's not my money.
Right.
I guess in a way, I don't want him to leave, so it would suck to pay relievers that much, but I wouldn't mind.
But the Yankees can. So much. Deep down, the Yankees can afford it, I'm sure.
Oh, God, yeah.
Well, yeah, I think
it's just a matter of Hal's capacity, what he wants to do for this year.
Yeah. I think we should also mention, I don't know if you guys read the Kylie McDaniel article about the Yankees.
Yeah, one he said, like, if they had told them that they could theoretically have a $500 million payroll and break even.
Yeah. So I guess, like, the idea of the budget is more self-imposed than,
yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we know that, but that gives it more of a number. Like, it's more self-imposed. If the Yankees wanted to splurge and get Robertson, they're not gonna be kicking themselves if they get in the postseason because they have another good player.
No.
Yeah.
Plus, they get that other Baseball Prospectus article from, like, a year or two back where they're talking about, like, how the Yankees, unlike other teams, are really affected if they miss the playoffs just because the fans won't come out as much and they miss a lot of revenue.
Yeah, they lose because their marginal win curve is much different than most teams. So if they lose games, if they go below 85 wins, or they miss the postseason, they lose a ton of money. Think of something like if they miss the postseason, they lose like $40 million or something in revenue, which is crazy because like then they're basically thinking like, yeah, okay, we'll rather send Max Scherzer and then net $20 million theoretically than basically just lose the 40 guaranteed.
Right.
Yep.
We touched on this at the beginning of the podcast, but we could probably explore the Didi Gregorius trade more. How do you feel about Didi Gregorius being the shortstop solution for next year?
I mean, I'm fine with it. Obviously, he's not like a great hitter, but he probably can still hit better than what we got last year out of that position.
Yeah, and that's kind of like
religious, but
it's kind of a sobering thought that even though, like, you know, he's like he's replacing Derek Jeter, the Derek Jeter he is replacing. The physical 2014 form was not very impressive, even with the bat.
Yeah.
And yeah. Gregorius is supposed to be terrific in the field, so
yep,
that's a good sign.
Yeah,
which is not
the only thing that I'm really upset about. This is nothing to do with how he plays. Just the fact that people are going to spell his name wrong every single day.
Oh god,
yeah,
it's already
every single there's going to be an O, there's going to be a Y, there's going to be like a Z somewhere. It's just constantly going to be wrong.
People saying Gregorius.
But other than that, I think it's such an interesting trade, just all around. Just the fact the Yankees did another three-team trade with the same teams from 5 years ago, almost to the day, is really interesting. And the fact that the Yankees had to go through another team to make a trade they were going to do straight up with them is really interesting. But I think it's a cool trade because now, even though the chances of him being great are pretty slim, he's going to be like okay, it's just the fact that now you have a position that's on the uptick. Theoretically, you have a position that's in theory going to improve, as opposed to their other option. Okay, we could sign, you know, Steven Drew, but even if he's okay, he's just going to get worse. If we sign him as Drubal Cabrera or Jed Lowry, they're going to get worse. We can guarantee that. Didi Gregorius, at least he's 24, so in theory, by the end of his team control, he should be in his prime. Or at least getting better. So there's a bunch of upside. So it's incredibly difficult to evaluate the comparison between Green and Gregorius because they're both young players who you don't really know what their upside is going to be. But now the Yankees have a position that's really hard to fill with a very young player with some upside, with really good defense, and the possibility for a decent bat, which is better than what you could say, you know, even 2 years ago at the position.
Yep.
And maybe something else for Gregorius that will help is that he doesn't have, like, someone else, like, standing behind him waiting to take his job the way that Chris Owings was in Arizona, where, like, you know, this way Didi Gregorius doesn't really have to worry about, oh, no, some other young prospect is going to take my job, because no one's going to do that in the Yankee system right now. Not with the closest, you know, what do we got, like, Cito Culver and A-Ball.
It's the closest.
Tyler
Wade.
Carmen
Angelini.
Yeah, I mean, and Jorge Mateo is interesting, but he's a baby, basically.
Yeah, he's like 9. So there's no. Yeah, he doesn't have to be because I really wonder what effect that plays on him. Like he played like half of the season in the majors, and then he keeps going back and forth. I'm sure there's like you don't ever get in a rhythm where you're facing major league pitching,
right.
And you have to constantly adjust.
Plus, like there's just a different standard of living when you're living around in the minors versus the majors, so I'm sure that played a little bit into it as well. And
yeah.
I know Cashman talked a little bit about he might platoon with Brendan Ryan, but I think I'll believe that when I see it, just because Brendan Ryan is such an atrocious hitter that it doesn't really make a difference.
And that's also not his decision. He's like saying that as if he's the manager. Like that'll be Joe Girardi's decision when he wants to do that. Catchman's job is to assemble the roster, not to decide how Girardi uses the roster. He may suggest it, but I would imagine that Joe Girardi's not going to use Brendan Ryan as a platoon hitter.
I mean, we barely saw Brendan Ryan this year, and we thought maybe we'd see him a little bit more, like, you know, relieving Jeter at the end of games, but even that didn't really happen that often.
Nope.
No, yeah.
I also enjoy the people that are like, oh, Gregoris is just as good a hitter as Brendan Ryan, so why wouldn't you just keep Ryan? It's like, no.
Yeah.
It's like,
Ryan is atrocious.
Yeah, it's also because Didi Gregorius is league minimum for the next, like, 5 years. He's like, and he's in the arbitration, and he'll be, like, cheap for the next, like, five years. Mm-hmm. And he's going to get better. And Ryan has been getting worse for a while. His defense isn't even elite anymore.
Yeah. So it's really interesting to gauge, like, how what Ryan's role on the team is going forward exactly. I guess he's just kind of, like, random bench infielder who's, you know, paid a couple million dollars. Yes.
To do impressions.
Yeah.
And make amusing gifts.
He slugged under his on-base percentage this year, and his on-base percentage was .211.
Nice job, Brendan.
That makes sense.
167, .211, .202 in 49 games.
That's amazing.
It is. He's just
That's
not
like UniSC Bendort Japan numbers.
Oh, yeah. I hope Uni catches on somewhere again in 2015. I want to see Uni go to the Korean League and just tear it up like Felix PA.
I want to see him go to Hong Kong.
Or the Mexican League and do like the Ruben Rivera.
Oh my god, that's just one of the funniest things that, you know, years after like he was last seen in Major League Baseball running around the bases for the Giants like an idiot, he's still playing in the Mexican League and doing pretty well. Oh man. But the shortstop position, at least we know that there's going to be someone standing out there on opening day, and that there will be some serious hope behind it beyond just, you know, the Asdrubal Cabrera, hope this works out, or Jed Lowry, or Everett Cabrera, which I thought seemed like a nice idea when he was immediately non-tendered by the Padres, and I looked into it a little bit more, and it's like, oh, geez, this guy's kind of a piece of crap, and he's not very good either.
Yeah. I find the response, the Yankee fan response to this trade really hilarious, because the Yankee fans have been clamoring as the team has gotten older these past couple of years to, like, let the kids play.
Yeah.
And that's been, like, the rallying cry of, like, Yankee fans. And now they, like, got a player who's incredibly young and has a lot of upside and has, like, had a good year at one point. And everyone's like, no, why did we get him? It's like, that's exactly what you asked for.
No, even if, like suppose this guy who's Didi Gregorius had the exact same AAA numbers in the Yankee system last year, we would totally be like, oh yeah, pencil him in.
Absolutely. Like, Jose Perella hit worse than he did in AAA. But yet, people are clamoring for Jose Perella to be, like, the captain of the Yankees next year.
As much as I would really enjoy that. Well, okay, so that's Gregorius. We should talk a little bit about the Yankees and Chase Headley, because they've been kind of connected throughout the offseason. There's been rumors around both camps talking about, like, they both have some interest in returning and bringing Headley back to New York, but the Yankees only want to spend so much, and Headley supposedly has a 4-year, $65 million offer in hand that some people are skeptical if it exists.
Yeah, no one really knows. It could be some 14-year-old who said that.
Yeah. Well, no, I think that was, like, a rumor that was leaked.
No, I think Ken Rosenthal.
Yeah, but, like, they said, like, some industry execs are skeptical that it even exists. It's like, yeah, just tell Rosenthal that we have this offer. So, I don't know. It seems like the Yankees are at a weird point where they don't really know if they want to bring Headley back, but their third base situation is kind of a question mark anyway, so I don't know. It's hard to gauge what's really going on there.
Yeah, I guess they have to assess what is the gap between him and whoever they would put at second base. Because it has to be, if Prado's going to play third, whoever they're playing second base, if that gap is significantly large, if they feel Refsnyder is like not even a replacement level player, then they must feel that Hedlund would then provide significant amount of value until Refsnyder is ready to play second base, and they could always have Prado play right field. Mm-hmm. But if they feel like if they're confident that Refsnyder could be an average player, then getting Hedlund wouldn't make as much sense, because then you basically have, you're only gaining a couple of wins for a guy you're going to pay $65 million for. But I'm going to lean towards, they probably think Refsnyder's not that great. They think he's a good hitter. They just don't think he can field at all. And they probably would like the assurance of having a good player, a solid player in Hedley at third base. And then it gives you so much more flexibility with Prado. And then if somebody gets hurt, you still have Refsnyder to call up and give him a shot. And it just gives you so many more options with A-Rod could play. Any pretty much like third base or first base.
Shortstop.
So they would have so much. Shortstop, right field. He could be the next closer.
Yeah, that's right. We didn't say this before, but A-Rod could be the closer. Can we go to the bullpen? Alex Rodriguez.
He would choose Enter Sandman as his entrance music.
And he'd ask to wear number 2. He's like, oh yeah, so now the Jeter's gone, I can wear number 2, right? Unretire 3. But yeah, I mean, bringing Hedley back would just create so much more versatility that the Yankees have lacked in the past couple of years. Because, you know, whenever anyone in the infield has gotten hurt, it's really just crippled them for the rest of the season.
Yeah.
Like they didn't really have a solution at third base until they signed Hedley, and that took pretty much since A-Rod was last healthy in 2012.
Yeah, it was pretty much like the DFA train of players that were like on the waiver wire.
Mm-hmm. And I would add 2013 Alex Rodriguez to that train too, because you know he was really only healthy for a month before he got hurt, and then he didn't really do much in September.
Yeah, he was okay. He like
yeah.
Even if you got that production from him, I wouldn't be like dissatisfied. But yeah, they haven't had
I'd be thrilled if they got that much.
Yeah,
yeah, I'm sure they won't. But
I think the Yankees' ideal situation is him, like, you know, doing something for half a season, then getting hurt, and then they can collect money. Oh, man.
Yeah. And so what do you guys think about the price point? Do you think $65 million is too much? Do you think it's fair? What do you guys think?
Yeah, I think that's about fair. I mean, that's what I probably would have guessed you would get.
I mean, I think it's a little high. I know that, you know, Pablo Sandoval and Hanley Ramirez getting all that money from the Red Sox kind of set the market at that high peak level. And, you know, Hedley's not terribly far off from Sandoval. So I could see how, like, there would be an argument. I don't know, $65 million just seems like a lot for a guy whose value is mostly predicated on the value of his defense, which, granted, he is a really great defender at third base. But, I don't know, the back concerns me. His bat is pretty good, but not like overwhelming for a third baseman.
Yeah,
like I would, in the end, if the Yankees, like, if it turned out, oh yes, the Yankees have this contract for 4 years, $65 million for Hedley, again, I'm not gonna like hate it just because I like Hedley as a player, and I know deep down the Yankees have the financial wherewithal to withstand that, but I just don't know how, like, Hal would then play the rest of the offseason with that.
Yeah, does it constrict them in other areas? Because you have to imagine that them acquiring a pitcher improves them more, because it fills this spot that's, like, literally empty. Mm-hmm. While technically they're not empty at an infield position, they do have players to fill the positions, while they currently do not have a fifth starter. Mm-hmm. So they may rationalize and say, you know, if we get a McCarthy, or even we go and get a Lester or Scherzer, that dollar is going to go further by filling a black hole in the fifth starter position than if we were to get a third baseman when we already have infielders. Mm-hmm. So unless that's not going to constrict them at all, unless Hal says, you know, players for everybody and they just go hog wild. Because I am not putting that out of the equation, because the Yankees don't want to do that. All of a sudden, one day, I'll just like get home. And they'll just be, oh yeah, by the way, we signed everybody.
They even signed, you know, players that you didn't even think they wanted.
Yeah, you get my favorite.
They signed Melky, because why not?
My favorite is always the Gammons tweet, the Gammon Suite is always the best for the Yankees, because it would be like Scherzer to the Yankees.
Yeah, Heyman.
It wouldn't even be like
Heyman does that too.
Yeah. Like Ken Rosenthal's like source Yankees close to acquiring Headley. Like Gammons are just like Headley to Yankees.
No, but I think I've
done the Yankees. And then after that, it'll be a butt tweet.
I've seen Heyman drop bombs like that too sometimes, but definitely Gammons does that. But Rosenthal is always like source, where especially John Paul Morosi, source. These teams might be talking, but they aren't.
Yeah, I just got one. Sources. Nationals playing another effort to sign Jordan Zimmermann long term.
One of my favorites was, I think, last year, where it was like, you know, source, Jose Bautista seems like he would be a good fit for X team. But as of now, there have not been any trade conversations.
No, that's the, did you read the one about the Orioles and the Blue Jays? Was it the Orioles and the Blue Jays? It was the Morosi tweet, I think. It was like, one team has bats. Oh, it was the Rockies and the Orioles.
Oh, yeah,
like,
yeah.
That was amazing.
Rockies have bats, Orioles need bats. But there have been no trade talks between them.
Oh, man. That's pretty great.
Morosi really wants to just be a GM, doesn't he?
Yeah. He wants to be the Tigers GM, specifically. Half of his stories are about the Tigers, it seems like.
That's definitely not going to happen with Dave Dombrowski ruling the roost.
No. Well, maybe Dombrowski can be president and he can be GM. Then it can be like a Theo Jed Hoyer thing. But it'll be like when the White Sox made Hawk GM for a year and he fired Tony La Russa and made a really stupid trade too.
I'm surprised Cashman didn't jump on that.
What, like hiring Hawk? Or hiring John
No,
Stern?
Taking advantage of him being a GM and like making some crazy trades with him.
Oh, yeah, okay, so yeah, he fired Tony La Russa and Dave Dombrowski, who was the assistant GM at the time, and then he traded Bobby Bonilla, who became good before he became a punchline, for, like, a pitcher that did nothing, and then he left. Oh, man. Anyway, I'm getting off track. I was thinking another thing about maybe I can justify that kind of deal for Headley if I'm thinking mentally, if I was okay with, like, I don't know, hypothetically, a 4-year, $45 million for Headley, and then the rest of the offseason playing out the way I want it with, like, them bringing back McCarthy and maybe another starter. And in my originally, I had mentally added in that they would probably spend about $20 million or something to get a shortstop in to fill that role. But if they already did that by getting Didi Gregorius, maybe they could use the hypothetical $20 million I was thinking about and just add that to Headley if they wanted.
That's what I've been thinking. And I think that's what the idea they had in mind. It was like, well, now we're paying literally nothing for Didi Gregorius and our shortstop is filled, so we can just use that money elsewhere. Because I'm sure they had in the back of their mind, if this Gregorius trade falls through, we got to allocate our resources somewhere else. So I'm sure Steinbrenner said, you have X dollars to spend. And Cashman said, okay, we got to make this work with this amount of money. And now they're basically saying, okay, now our budget is pretty much larger. Mm. So you got to imagine they have an extra $10 million a year to spend. Because what were they going to spend if they had to get Cabrera or Lowry? What, like $330?
Probably. Something maybe a little bit below that, because that's around what Omar Infante got. They're not as good as he was after 2013. But they'd probably be at least getting like $15 to $20 million. So.
Yeah, so you got to figure they're saving that money, the $20 million, and they could probably put that towards Headley. And you got to consider the market you're in. You look at a guy like Markakis who got $444 million, and he's having like a bulging disc surgery next week. Yeah. And the team knew about it.
Hashtag barves.
So if a bulging disc in Markakis costs $45 million, I think that $65 million for Headley is a pretty fair deal.
Mm. Yeah.
Well, I guess we'll find out what exactly is going on with Headley sooner or later. No, actually, we won't figure anything out. He'll stay unsigned, and there will just be talks throughout the season.
Yeah. Just like the Steven Drew. He'll just like be like at the agent compound like Drew, mm-hmm. lurking.
I heard the Barbs might want Steven Drew.
For second base.
bold.
Because they got rid of Tommy La Stella.
Yeah, and Steven Drew's like, hey, so I'm going to play shortstop, right? And Andrelton's like, lol. What else? Oh, so maybe they'll go after one of Scherzer or Lester. It seems like they've been kind of linked to the two at various points throughout this offseason, but as the Yankees often do, they're being very cagey about whether or not they were actually interested.
Yeah, the thing is, the Yankees can't say they're interested. They can't leak that they're interested unless they want to, because they affect the market so much that if they say that they're interested, they'll essentially inflate the market price. Because like Boris purposely drops that the Yankees are interested, even if they're not.
Yeah.
Because he wants to inflate the value of his clients. So the Yankees don't want to say they're involved. They want to say they're not involved. The guys who are the most dangerous the Yankees can get are guys you don't think they're going to get. Because then they just can swoop in and basically take the market by storm, because they didn't affect the market price by saying that they were interested.
Yeah. Yeah, I would not be opposed to them bringing in one of these guys if they did, in fact, decide to, you know, one day you see Yankees sign Max Scherzer to this contract. It's like, oh, okay. I mean, because they really need a boost to their starting rotation now, which, you know, we were talking about, like, at the beginning of the show. It's really a bunch of question marks right now, even more so than before with Green and Detroit. So, if they want to compete, they gotta get some of these starters, at least McCarthy, if not McCarthy and Scherzer or Lester.
Yeah, I know that they had. I don't know if you read the interview with CC Sabathia. He said they asked him about his knee surgery, and he said, "The knee, I have no complaints. I'm able to do all of my workouts. I'm changing a few things, not as much pounding and running. I'm in the pool a lot, on different machines to get cardio. I feel like." And they asked him if he thinks he can get a 30-start, 200-inning year out of him, and he said, "Yes, for sure. I feel like I can." And I don't believe that at all.
No.
Yeah. I don't
Without
really,
all that being said.
I don't really think CC Sabathia is going to be like, you know, I kind of feel shitty, so don't expect much from me.
It's almost like
my leg
the
really hurts. It's bad.
it's almost like the story.
No, I guess it's kind of like, you know, when Mark Teixeira is saying, well, I don't think I could be a 150-game guy per year anymore, except that actually happened.
Yeah. That's like the opposite of the "you're the best shape of your life" type of story that you hear about in spring training. They come into the season saying, "I'm in the best shape of my life. I think I can play every game this year." That's yet to be seen if his knee will actually hold up, because that's a sketchy track record with that type of knee surgery. But there have been players who come back from that and have done fine. And there have also been players who have come back and have disappeared into an abyss.
Yeah, I just think as long as fans, I know it's going to be hard for some Yankees fans, but if fans don't try not to expect old CC, they might be satisfied with what he gives them at this point. Because, like, I don't know, this late in the contract, I wasn't really expecting him to, like, you know, remain like Cy Young caliber form anyway. So I didn't expect his knee to give out like this, but still, I think if he could be league average, maybe a little bit better, that would be great.
That's what I've been thinking. Yeah, league average. Yeah. And I mean, league average would be fine.
If he could offer what Andy Pettit did in 2013, that would be useful.
Yeah, it's just the only thing is, like, what was I going to say? I blanked out. What Matt F. were you saying?
I was just agreeing that I would totally take league average.
Oh, yeah, the thing I was going to say is, by the way, the vesting option is the worst thing ever.
Oh, yes, with the, I think it vests if he gets, like, a certain amount of innings, as long as he's healthy with his shoulder.
No, yeah, it's a option vest if, 1, does not end 2016 season on DL with shoulder surgery, or 2, spends 45 or more days on DL with shoulder surgery, or 3, does not make more than 6 relief appearances in 2016 because of a shoulder injury.
It's a very weird bunch of clauses.
Yeah, so that's terrible. that's just terrible, terrible contract. An option. Everything else, because honestly, if it didn't have that option, it was just until 2016, period, I would say that's totally fine. Mm-hmm. It's just the fact that now you got to put up with him for 3 years, and whatever level you get with him in 2015, if it's league average, you got to assume that's going to get worse the next year.
Right.
Yeah.
So if it's league average in 2015, you're talking about 5% worse than league average in 2016, 10% worse than league average in 2017. So
I'm hopeful that maybe there are like some clauses we don't know about in those vesting options that are, like, go beyond the shoulder injury. Maybe they have something about like the knee. I don't know. But as of now, it doesn't look pretty.
No. We're 3 more years of him. There's been what do you guys think about at near the end of his contract him becoming a reliever, like a late inning reliever?
That would be pretty funny.
Yeah, I was thinking about that a couple of weeks ago, and like we have seen like people go into the bullpen and have like increase in velocity. So I don't know. Maybe he can get back to at least somewhat what he was if he did go into the bullpen towards the end.
Yeah, because
maybe that's something they're thinking about, but they don't want to like explore it quite yet because they want to see how he does in this first season following that major knee surgery.
Yeah,
and I mean the Giants kept starting Barry Zito until like the end of his contract too, even though he was kind of crap. So I don't...
True. Yeah, it could be like a Barry Zito deal. But yeah, they if I would imagine that they wouldn't explore that until the final year of his contract.
No, probably
just
not.
because. If he does poorly this upcoming year, there's always the justification that, well, it was just a year coming off of major knee surgery, so it could just be an adjustment period. But if he does poorly the following year, there's really no excuse at that point. So then they could just say, yeah, he's just bad now, and we have to put him in the bullpen or do something with him.
Anyway, they need some sort of boost, so hopefully they sign one of these starters and maybe two.
Yeah.
Okay, we're like a good while into the podcast now, so we can switch to another topic that's throughout the baseball landscape right now. The Hall of Fame voting process has begun. The BBWAA members have gotten their ballots. They're sending them back. Some of them have revealed them with their already kind of weird results. But so there are a whole bunch of names on the Hall of Fame ballot. I wrote a post a little bit back. Kind of went into how our staff would vote if we had Hall of Fame votes.
Mm-hmm.
And we put in, from our 16-member staff, we had put in 7 Hall of Famers. We said Randy Johnson, Pedro Martinez, Mike Mussina, Barry Bonds, Roger Clemens, Mike Piazza, and Craig Biggio. And there were a bunch of other guys who came pretty close as well. And that kind of is the story of this ballot, because the 10-player limit really kind of handicaps what's going, how many players who are actual Hall of Famers can really be nominated by these writers. Because I know that Buster Olney wrote a column recently saying he was just abstaining from voting this year just because he felt it was kind of an injustice to give to not vote for some people just because he couldn't physically because of the 10-player limit. So, and there he's not the only writer who's saying, like, I would vote for more if I could. So,
yeah.
So they really need to get on expanding that ballot.
Yeah, or the Veterans Committee, they'll have to expand their hours because yeah. There'll be a lot of Veterans Committee Hall of Famers going in.
Theoretically, anyway.
Yeah. I mean, but you can assume, unfortunately, that anyone who had any alleged steroid use is not getting in the Hall of Fame.
No, yeah, Bonds and Clemens aren't going to get close to there.
No, and Piazza, for some reason, is going to be tainted with that stupid Murray Chass rumor.
He had back knee.
About back knee. He's on his steroids. So that's going to, for some reason, hurt his eligibility. For some reason, he'll get in eventually.
Yeah,
the thing is, I'm not concerned because they're all going to get in eventually, those guys, at some point.
Probably, yeah. But we'll, I guess we still have to see because we don't know. We can say that, yeah, some of the writers who are more progressive about the PED era stuff, like Jonah Carey, Jay Jaffe, all those people who are going to be voting for the Hall of Fame one day, maybe these guys won't be on the ballot by the time they're actually able to vote, though. So then it goes up to the Veterans Committee, and the Hall of Fame can pretty much organize the Veterans Committee however much they want. So
yeah,
you could end up in a situation where like they're still not in the Hall of Fame 20 years from now. Who knows?
The only problem I have with the only not voting is that when you abstain from the vote, you're essentially giving an extra vote to somebody else who is voting in the direction you don't want them to be voting in. So they have like people on the Hall of Fame vote in the BBWAA who like aren't even baseball writers anymore. they were like baseball writers, then they got elected, then they got put onto the association, and then they stopped being baseball writers. So there's going to be like a golf writer, right? Getting a Hall of Fame ballot. Yeah, golf digest writer, and he's going to be basically like using like, and only he's going to be abstaining, so he's going to be getting an extra boost up. So I can understand where he's coming from, and I like admire it. But at the same time, it's like, okay, now you're not voting, and like some Golf Digest guy is going to vote and give some random vote. I would just vote for the guys that want to get in, and then that would help them get in.
Yeah, the only thing I'm hopeful is that maybe since Olney is a pretty big name among the BBWAA, that the Hall of Fame or the organization seeing this might create a ripple effect where other writers will be like, I'm abstaining as well, and maybe they don't want that. So while it's not going to make a difference this year, maybe it'll do something down the line.
True.
I don't know. I'm not sure how I feel about it either, just because I know that Olney thinks pretty hard about his votes and usually puts up a pretty good, decent ballot. So it's just kind of unfortunate that they're going to be missing out on one. Hopefully no one misses the Hall of Fame by one vote. It would have made it otherwise. Yeah.
I think that they're going to have to change the restriction. They're going to have to change quite a few things. They're going to have to change who can vote. That stupid, like, 10-year limit, where, like, you have to be in the BBWA, like, for 10 years to vote, which I think is kind of crazy. It's kind of a crazy thing, because, like, if you're in, you're in, you know? Mm-hmm. It shouldn't be like, you're in, but then you got to sit here for 10 years.
Go wait in the lobby.
Yeah, wait in purgatory for 10 years, even though you may move careers. You may move to a different sport, so you may not even be there anymore. They're going to change the 10. I think they will change the 10 person limit. And I think one day they will eventually put those steroid users into the Hall of Fame. Probably won't be by ballot, but I think they will put them in. I don't think it'll be like with some weird asterisk, but I think it'll just be with the knowledge of the era as it stood, more objective, because I feel like if people who think about it today are like so emotional, like, oh, they cheated, they ruined our great game. It's like, but I think people don't really have that opinion about like Shoeless Joe Jackson.
And it's not, and a lot of these writers are very complicit in like, you know, not talking about it either. So.
Yeah, and they were like totally cool with it when they made money off of their writing while the team's players were hitting home runs and while they were covering home run races when like they full well knew they were taking steroids. The owners knew. But it turned into like kind of a witch hunt, where they blame the players for using steroids, but they pretty much were cool with it. And it wasn't even against the rules. There was no rule against the steroids they used. So they broke no rules. Ethically speaking, it was shaky, but they set up a system where they were compelled to use it. And they gave out these huge starting to give out bigger contracts that, with full knowledge that they were using steroids.
And there's such a discrepancy between, like, you know, the caliber of life in the minors and caliber of life in the majors, where, like, you know, I could see it would be very tempting for a guy who's, like, kind of quad-A talent and be like, hey, maybe if I use steroids, I can get a major league contract, and that'll instantly give me, like, almost $500,000 and maybe again in a few years. And that kind of sets you for life, or gets you at least on a pretty good, pretty good path, so.
And even if you get caught after you get – because once you get that tendered major league contract, even if you're like, you know what, if I get suspended, I still come back and I have the rest of my contract.
Yep.
So you feel like you do the cost-benefit analysis and basically say, like, okay, I'll take the 1 year off my contract and just take the rest of the money because it's just more efficient. And then the owners are like, oh, these bad players, but we'll gladly take the money, the revenue they create. Yeah, so I think in the future people will eventually be more progressive about that, and the Veterans Committee will eventually put in Bonds, as he should be in, and Clemens.
Well, can I just say one thing quick on the 10-player limit rule?
Go for it.
I agree it should be, but I know, like, I would totally abuse it and, like, vote for Eddie Guardado for the laughs.
if you had, like, an unlimited ballot, then you could just say, like, you know what, I'll give a Hall of Fame. Then you can get away with, like, the writers who are like, oh yes, I promised JT Snow I would give him a Hall of Fame vote at some point just because I can. Then you could do that if you had an unlimited ballot, because it wouldn't be taking a spot away from someone else.
I'd vote for Ron Valone.
It's like, you know what? I like Diddy Guardado's moxie. Okay. Well, who do you think will be getting into the Hall of Fame, actually, from this ballot?
Pedro, definite. Randy Johnson, definite.
And then I think maybe Biggio.
Yeah, maybe Biggio and maybe Smoltz, too. But that would be a big class. I hope so, though.
I think Schilling will get in next year.
Schilling?
Yes, I do.
He's not close.
You don't think he's close at all?
No, well, he's not close in percentage-wise. He only got, like, 29% last year. That'd be a huge step up.
Hmm.
Yeah, he got 29% of the vote in 2014. So, I don't know. That would be a big step up for him. I think Bagwell and Piazza are getting closer. They won't get in this year, but...
No, Piazza will get in soon, though, in the next few years.
Yeah, unless the Murray Chassis campaign is successful. And I wish Mike Messina would get a lot closer, but he only appeared on like 20% last year, which is pitiful.
That just sucks. Yeah. The fact that he was below Edgar Martinez just makes me like mad.
Mm-hmm. And I think Edgar Martinez is probably a Hall of Famer too, but I think Messina's much more qualified than.
But he was also below like Lee Smith too.
Yeah, Lee Smith's just the funniest thing.
Like, why is he so high? Why? How did he get 30% of the votes?
Because he was the all-time saves leader at one point.
Yay, saves.
Until Trevor Hoffman and Marin Rivera passed him by, like, 150. Modest.
Yeah.
So, there's so many good names on this ballot, too. It's just too bad that, like, a bunch of them are going to have to go off.
Yeah, and even the ones that are borderline, like, some of the borderline ones could have gotten in when the ballot was thinner.
Mm-hmm.
Like the Jeff Kents of the world.
Mm-hmm. Larry Walker, in another year, maybe you would have done a lot better than 10%.
Yeah. Gary Sheffield.
Oh, yeah, Gary Sheffield. There's a very real chance that Gary Sheffield might be one and done. I mean, just because, this ballot's so big.
Yeah. And strange that he'd be one and done. He was an amazing player.
Mm-hmm.
He was such an amazing player. He had a career 140 OPS.
Ridiculous. It's ridiculous how we're talking. Like, all these guys get in, and like we voted in 7 on our PSA ballot, and like 3 are going to get in this year.
Yeah.
Yeah, just 2 for sure, and then hopefully Biggio, I guess.
Yeah.
And Biggio's not even the best one of the ones that are not going to get in.
Right.
By not even close.
Mm-hmm. I think he's a Hall of
Famer. Bagwell is. Yeah. But he's, like, on, in my opinion, on the edge, but it's more of just, like, the 3,000 hits legacy type of thing.
Yeah.
Because Bagwell was a better player than he was. Reigns was a better player than he was. Mm. Even Edgar was, arguably.
Mm. Alan Trammell, probably.
Yeah, Alan Trammell. Sheffield was better than he was.
But I think it's pretty interesting Walker. How close Gary Sheffield and Sammy Sosa are. And they both have, like, the kind of the PED allegations around them, too. So, and Sosa only got 7% last year, so.
Yeah, he'll probably be out next year, I would imagine.
It wouldn't surprise me if this is Sammy Sosa's last time on a Hall of Fame ballot, which would be kind of inconceivable to think of, like, you know, just 10 years ago.
Ten years ago, you'd think, oh, yeah, he's on his way to being a first balloter.
Mm-hmm. Even, like, 6 years ago, before he was, like, on that 2003 list that was revealed... I think people were still like, yeah, he'd probably go in. But
yeah, but Sheffield is...
I'm looking forward to how many ballots Nomar Garciaparra goes on.
Yeah.
He's already been on at least best, one.
He's on the best half-career Hall of Fame list.
Yep. Well, that's the mess that is the Hall of Fame ballot right now. I guess we'll find out who goes in next month. But hopeful that Messina will at least move up a little bit. Vain, maybe. But
okay. Yeah, one day.
Okay. All right, so we've been going on for a while, so let's just go to the tweet bag, then we'll wrap up this podcast. All right, first question of the tweet bag from Yankee Raven. How likely is it that the Yankees will sign Yoan Moncada, and what kind of contract are we talking about? I think it's very difficult for us to say how likely it is.
Yeah,
I couldn't assign it a 8-1 odds, you know.
The over under on that is no, I don't even know.
I mean, they were mentioned as one of the 7 favorites for him. So
yeah,
so 1-7.
Yeah, there you go. You know, yeah. Okay, we're done here. But, yeah, I mean, I don't know a contract exactly. Probably somewhere around, like, at least what Soler got, I would think.
Yeah,
do you know what?
3 million?
Do you know what Soler got?
Soler got 3 million. I believe it was 3 million. I'm going to find it. But you have to imagine there'll be more.
Soler got 9 years and 30 million.
930 million. Wow. So, yeah. He is going to get something most likely larger than that because he is considered a first-round pick. Not a first-round. He's considered a first overall pick by many. Equivalent. So I would imagine he's going to get around the $40 million range.
Yeah, maybe even more for all we know. So.
Yeah. So, I don't know. And they got to pay 100% tax in that whole thing. So.
Yeah. I mean, I would definitely want the Yankees to go get him because, you know, at this point, they're already way past the international spending limit. So.
Yeah. I mean, not my money. So. Not my money. So spend the $80 million on him.
All right. Next one from J Malone 1. Do you see D-Rob coming back? Also, do you see a big starter coming? I think at this point, Robertson's not going to come back, but with the Miller signing. We already talked about this a little bit, but it just doesn't seem like the Yankees will actually spend for that. I think they will get another starter or two, but not D-Rob.
Probably not, unless he brings the price down, but I don't see that happening.
No. Like, I think they would give him Andrew Miller's contract, like a duplicate of that, definitely. But I don't think D-Rob's going to settle for that, so.
Probably not, no.
And he'll probably get a better offer, too.
Definitely, yeah. There are teams who are definitely wanting a shutdown closer. Yep. Yeah, especially after the last year's playoffs. Teams
or
just
the Astros. Astros offer him, like, $90 million, just as, why yep. not?
It would be amusing, anyway, if the Astros were to give him that much. I'd be a little sad, but at least... As long as D-Rob doesn't go to, like, a division rival, I'll be able to stomach it.
Yeah. If he went to a bad team, I wouldn't be upset at all. Even if he went to the Tigers, I'd be kind of upset. Because, like, he'd still be playing for a contending team, like, against the Yankees, really. But if it was, like, the Astros,
the
like, okay,
have played
cool.
a bunch.
Yeah, if it's, like, the Astros, like, all right, cool. He'll just play in, you know... like, down by 3 runs and just to finish off a game to get some work in. That'll be his job.
What if, like, the Twins signed him?
That'd be funny. I just don't understand a bad team signing a good closer. It just doesn't really make much sense to me.
Yeah, you would think that they would want to address, like, other areas first. But...
Yeah, that and the fact, like, if your team is rebuilding, don't you want to assign, like, more future value to your team, not, like, present value?
Yep.
I mean, like, by the time, like, they're supposed to be the 2017 world champion, so he's probably not going to be as good in 2017 as he's going to be next year, so.
I've already penciled them
in. Like, and you can't even make, like, the ticket sales argument because it's a reliever.
Oh.
Yeah, people are going to be lying. Because the thing is, people won't line up to see if they're only going to see him if they're winning. And if you don't think they're going to be winning, then you're not going to see him.
Yep. Oh, well. All right, next one from NY Limey. Even if we get D-Rob in a big starter, how do we score enough runs to get a lead ever?
Fair criticism.
Yeah. I mean, they still need to make moves to address the starting lineup, which they really haven't done yet. Adding Gregorius only, like, you know, replaces Jeter's shortstop production with the bat a little bit. And other than that, they still need to do something else, I think. Whether that's bring back Chase Headley, sign someone else to help in some way. You'd think that they might, or maybe they have another trade in the works for all we know. I don't know. Cashman works in mysterious ways.
Just swap out Jesus for Cashman.
Yes.
the Lord Cashman works in mysterious ways.
Well, it was like almost February. Last in like 2012 when they was like, oh, by the way, they traded Montero for Pineda and they signed Hiroki Kuroda too. It was like, wait, what?
Yeah, so I wouldn't put it out, but yeah, I personally don't think they're going to be a good hitting team. I mean, they'll just have to survive on pitching, defense, and good bullpen. They'll have to be the Royals.
Yeah, and they'll really need McCann and Beltran and to rebound, and for Ellsbury and Gardner to stay really good. So.
Yeah, there's not really much they can do on that front.
All right, next one. On a scale of 1 to 10, how amazing do you think a Miller, Betances, Robertson-fueled bullpen would be? Probably at least a 9.
Yeah, I'd say around a 9. That'd be pretty nasty.
It would be. Yeah.
The only thing bringing them down is Esmeel Rogers.
And we still don't know how good that Justin Wilson will be.
Yeah.
And then Lindgren's also possibly in the works. You don't know how far away he is, but you figure if they would have a lead after the 6th inning, you'd have to imagine that's pretty shutdown-esque.
Yep. All right. Next one. Who is most likely to be in the Yankees starting rotation in 2015? John Lester, Max Scherzer, David Phelps, or Adam Warren? That's from Long Island Listener.
Didn't he ask this question?
He's asked it like 4 times.
He definitely has.
I mean, on pure odds at this point, like David Phelps is like 100% locked.
Exactly. Yeah. Like for just
the current roster, he is totally in.
But yeah, by pure odds, it would have to be Phelps. But you know, Lester assures her wild cards. You never know.
Yeah.
Okay.
My guess would be that the odds of Phelps is equal to that of John Lester and Max Scherzer combined.
That's fair.
Because if they get one of them, they're not going to get Phelps. But if they don't get either of them, they'll have Phelps. So you have to imagine that he would have, let's say, twice the odds of Lester or Scherzer if they get him. But spitballing.
If they do sign one, I don't think Phelps would be the first name like booted from the rotation. If they also sign like McCarthy too, then.
Yeah,
I
think he'll be on the chopping block. I think they want him to be a swing starter. I don't think they want him to be in the starting rotation.
Yeah, I think they kind of acknowledge at this point he's not really like got to be. I don't know, like a rotation mainstay, even as a back end starter. Oh well, I think it's kind of interesting that we've heard like basically nothing about Brandon McCarthy so far. So his camp has been playing it very close to the vest.
Yeah.
Is Twitter picture still him in a Yankees uniform, so there's that.
It is. But isn't his handle still his old number, though?
Yeah, he never changed that.
So
he's like, we'll see. Okay. So that'll do it for us on the Pinstripe Alley podcast. Perhaps we'll meet again, I'm sure. If the Yankees do another big transaction at some point over the next few weeks, we'll have occasion to come back and talk about that move. But do you guys have anything else to add?
We're going to do Yankee Meet Trick of the Week.
Oh, yeah. Yankee Meet Trick of the Week. I forgot about that. All right. I've had a few Yankee of the Week.
My Yankee of the Week is sports in general, because both my teams won today. So.
Did Villa won today?
It did.
Go sports.
Amazing.
My Yankee of the Week is Landon Donovan, because he pulled a Derek Jeter by winning in his last game, in his final game, except he won the MLS Cup and not the World Series.
Did he score the game-winning goal, though?
No, that was Robbie Keane, which kind of makes more sense because Robbie Keane's actually good. But, yeah, I find a lot of parallels between the two of them as icons in their sport. So I give he's an honorable Yankee of the day.
Well, my Yankee of the Week is Didi Gregorius, because he's the new Yankee, and he drew that picture of Jeter. Just kind of interesting, but, you know, I'll take it.
He's a good drawer.
I haven't seen Andrew Miller on Twitter yet, so, you know, he can fix that. All right, who is your Mitre of the Week, Matt F.?
My Mitre of the Week is World Famine.
World Famine sucks.
Yeah.
Boo. What about your Mitre of the Week, Matt P.?
Mine is NBC for doing Peter Pan live.
Oh, God. As much as I enjoyed seeing the gifts of Christopher Walken.
That's bad. Don't do that again.
No.
Yeah, people talking, though, which is probably all they want.
Probably, yeah. My Mitre of the Week is the 90,000 teenage reporters on Twitter who are just spouting random shit.
MLB, NLAL,
hey,
Federal League.
He has sources. Hashtag. AKA my favorite was Incarcerated Bob or something.
My favorite was he literally just copied and pasted a tweet and said that it was for Adam Jones, where he literally just copied the quote and didn't retweet it or anything.
Yeah. It was just like, oh, this one person said that. It's like, yeah, that was Adam Jones, you dingus.
Oh, yeah. He said
it was Adam Jones, but like, so like Adam Jones said, instead of like actually retweeting it and or at the very least didn't manually RT it.
Nope.
Like Adam Jones said this. It's like, yeah, no, we saw it like 2 minutes ago on his Twitter.
Yeah, you weren't interviewing him. You just saw that.
I like today. He said that the Red Sox are having discussions to acquire Giovanni Gallardo, which sounds like a big lie. I feel like when you have a 14-year-old on Twitter, there's going to be a case where someone's going to make fun of him and he's going to get upset, and then there's going to be like a tweet from like his mom.
Hey guys,
this is Jake's mom. I'd like to say you should stop saying such mean things about my young man.
Who was the person today that said like Scooter Jeanette?
Oh, I found it. Yeah, if you search Scooter Jeanette on Twitter, it comes up. This kid named Adam Enkin. I'm gonna read a couple of tweets, and then the last one is gonna prove that he's full of it. So it says, breaking, Scooter Jeanette to the Yankees for Sean Kelly and Austin Romine. I expect an announcement soon. He then says, no announcement from the Yankees. I am waiting for a second confirmation. A few tweets later, he just tweeted 26 seconds ago, I will be posting videos of myself as a catcher soon. Please grade me on the 20/80 scale.
Wow. That is the most teenage Twitter wannabe reporter thing I've seen.
And he has a website called Yankees News 26.
Not Yankees News 23. No, that one's crap. So. Oh, okay. Apparently 3 minutes ago he tweeted after someone who's like, you know, someone tweeted out, I mean, like, people denied that, you know? And so he's like, I had a source who lied to me and made me look very bad. I'm very sorry and embarrassed.
Yeah. I think we have to follow that Twitter rule, which is rule number one, don't tweet.
Yes.
I mean, I didn't grow up with Twitter.
Oh, he deleted the tweets now. Uh-oh.
I mean, I didn't have Twitter when I was that age, but I can't imagine, like, when I was that age, deciding, like, oh, I'm going to try and break news. This is going to be awesome.
Like, that was the last thing I thought about Twitter.
Yeah. And his Twitter photo, like, the cover photo is, like, a Yankee whose head is cut off at the top of the crop. Oh, jeez. Anyway, yeah, they're all my meter of the week. Just log off. Lose your password. Go stay in school.
Seriously, just go do your homework. It'll help you.
Yeah. Get off my lawn.
Stop trying to compete with Rosenthal. You're not going to win.
No.
You're absolutely not going to win.
I mean, even if you do get one right, it's the broken clock rule.
Yeah. It's like, ah, I got it. Very good.
It's like, yeah, it's 5 o'clock somewhere.
What about the other seven things you said?
Those were sources who lied to me. Enough of them. We're giving them too much publicity. All right. So you can follow us on Twitter at Pinstripe Alley. Follow the GIFs account at PSA_GIFs. Follow me on Twitter at MernsPSA. Follow Matt Off on Twitter at MattF15. And follow Matt Provenzano on Twitter at MattProv94. And don't forget to like our Facebook, facebook.com/PinstripeAlley. And send in tweet bag questions whenever I send a request out. Always appreciate hearing what you want us to talk about. And hopefully the Yankees will give us something interesting to talk about soon so we can come back. But until then, I'm Andrew Burns. Have a good night.